Hi, everybody. Welcome to the WFNY Cavs Cast. I'm not your host, Craig Lindell, and we are part of the Waiting for Next Year Podcast Network and the Evergreen Podcast Network. Seth is our host tonight. How's it going, Seth?
Doing excellent, Craig. Good to finally be on a podcast with you. Craig, you're the WFNY godfather. I've listened to a lot of your pods, so I'm just pumped to be listening and sharing the waves with yourself and Matt tonight. How are you?
I think that just means I'm old. How's it going, Matt?
How about you guys?
It might be internet related as well, not just the AirPods. So I think Matt's getting it worked out. We'll get him back in the stream here.
It's one of those days where we gotta do some additional testing on Matt's setup. We gotta go full geek mode just to send out the geek squad, see if we can get his internet up going, maybe hook him up with a new Wi-Fi router. I don't know.
And I think this was Matt's first time on a podcast. So that serves me right.
By the way, is there Q&A? Is there anything more frustrating than when you're the guy and you're like, you're giving people information and you're trying to talk and then you realize they're only hearing every other word and then you just hate it. You hate it.
I saw his look. He just looked down and kind of gave one of the just brutal. So he's going,
hey, Matt, do you have like a walkie talkie or something? Maybe a tin can and a string you could dial in.
Oh boy, I know we've all heard that over COVID the last couple of years. What are you saying? I think what I heard Matt come in with for a moment there was Darius Garland kind of recapturing what we all saw as Cavalier fans last year. This is a guy who can go out and get 30 points a game, who can orchestrate the offense. And I don't know about you, Craig, one of the things that was really interesting to me, Donovan Mitchell, you know, the team won, was 8-1 at one point. Donovan Mitchell was on a tear and went back to the Utah Jazz days where he's just in attack mode. He gets into the paint and then he goes and finds a shooter. And so the notion of the offense having to completely change from kind of a one-man band to Darius Garland coming back, it's been fascinating. And frankly, I think that's where a few of these losses have come in. It's been like your turn, my turn. Do you think there's a lot more to go on that end? Do you think there's, you know, they need another 10, 15, 20 games? Do you think, you know, last night's game might be big for Darius and figuring out that, hey, okay, you know, I can turn it on, but we need to do it together.
Well, and I'm going to kind of avoid your question by reframing it a little bit, which is kind of unfair, but it's interesting because I knew about Donovan Mitchell and I'd seen his highlights and everything else. But what you don't know about these guys when you're watching them in another city is what they're like as people and what their mentality is and their attitude is like. And so the revelation for me, we knew that Garland is just an all-world teammate level guy. But I didn't know if Donovan Mitchell was going to be big ego guy or big attitude guy but it turns out that he's kind of that same mentality. He fits in perfectly with Darius Garland and Jared Allen and all these guys who want to put the team first and see the big picture. And he just seems to have the right mentality to figure out the way to make it work. And so I don't know how many more games it's going to take, but I feel so much more comfortable now that we've gotten to know Donovan Mitchell a little bit. Or, I mean, maybe the rest of you guys already did. Maybe you follow the NBA closer than I do, but I never look outside of Cleveland unless it's like a rival who I despise. And so as much as I knew Donovan Mitchell was a great player, I didn't know he was this kind of dude who's just going to fit in from an attitude and a mentality standpoint.
Yeah, we've heard nothing but great things about him as a leader. He's been very patient with the young group, and I like a few of the things he's said throughout the season. Even when they went on that massive win streak to start the year, he said, you know, guys, there's going to be downs. He's been through this. I think some of the young kids last year, like, hey, this NBA is awesome. It's all sunshine and rainbows, and this is great. Great crowd. You know, teams love us. Donovan's like, no, 82-game season. We're going to have some lows. It's all about tomorrow. It's all about the next day. That's one perspective I'm really happy that it appears that he's brought to this young team. Hey, guys, you got to storm and keep playing for tomorrow.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that he said, I was lucky enough to get to the home opener, and that was the game where he kind of fumbled the lead away in the last two possessions. They end up going to overtime, and he ends up helping them win it in overtime. And his post-game comments, he was like, you know, I'm glad we were able to come out with a win. I wish I hadn't choked it away at the end of the regulation. And just the way that he took responsibility, not in that kind of Kevin Stefanski, you know, we got to look at the tape. We all got to do better. But like, I can't believe I put us in this position. I was so lucky. And I'm so happy that we were able to get it over the top after I put us in a bad spot in the last two possessions down. Like, that just told me everything I needed to know about Donovan Mitchell right there.
And what he's done, you know, we heard, we as in the outside, not fans of the Utah Jazz, there's been some pretty bad tape on him in the playoffs, specifically last year on the defensive end. And so I don't know about you, Craig, but I know when I heard about the news, you immediately go to, okay, what are the Cavaliers giving up? And then two, you go watch the Donovan Mitchell highlights. And you're like, oh boy, this is going to be sweet. But then
give
maybe
me some of that hip hop on YouTube, man.
That's right. That's right. And then maybe a day or two later, you kind of dig into, okay, why did the Jazz kind of flame out the past few years? They're consistently, you know, top 1-2 seed in the West the past couple of years. What's their deal? And then you see some stuff about Donovan not really trying on defense. And that was my biggest question about him this year, specifically with the Cavaliers' identity, man. It's big, nasty, 2 7-footers, but that is their identity, is the defensive end. And what would he do to incorporate into that? And man, he's playing the best defense. I don't think it's egregious to say of his career. He's guarding big guys. He's guarding Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. He's not letting guys post him up. I think he's averaging about 1.5 steals a game. His defense has really impressed me so far, and it kind of shows me, hey, this guy is not wanting, this is a direct quote, just because I'm here, I don't want the Cavs to drop from third best defensive rating in the league to below. I want to stay even or get better. And I love what he's done on the defensive end.
Well, and the one thing that people sometimes forget, and I hate to say that people sometimes forget, but defense is a team-wide mentality. It's a team commitment. One guy can't be a lockdown defender on defense in the NBA because it requires help, it requires movement, it requires strategy, and having the right pieces, where when the Cavaliers have tried to implement defense in the past, they might not have had the bigs or the desire in the bigs to do it, or they might not have had the length on the perimeter or the speed and the quickness around picks. It was like maybe Anthony Parker. You know, Anthony Parker in the old days played really good defense, but he didn't necessarily have the commitment from Booby Gibson and some of the other types of players around him. It takes all five guys or all eight guys in a rotation to commit to it, plus a coaching mentality. And then it takes commitment to keep it up over the long period of time. Because how many times have we seen a LeBron-led team start a season going, we're going to play fast, we're going to play fast? And they do for like 3 or 4 weeks before they, you know, LeBron decides he wants to play grinded out mode in the half court and just take his time. And so, and I'm not saying that's wrong, that's LeBron. You're going to live and die with whatever his good and bad habits are. But what the Cavaliers have going is a team commitment, and it's nice to see that Darius Garland folded right in.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, a defense that's currently ranked fourth in defensive rating, 109.6. A team that's net rating is second in the league. You know, they've blown quite a few teams out early this season. All of their losses have been close. The Clippers game, the Kings game, even last night they scored 40 points to the Timberwolves' 25 for a plus 15 for the quarter and brought the game back. So just the fight. That's one. One key attribute or trait that has carried over seemingly from last season to this season is this team's never out of it. They're one of those teams, Craig, post January 1st when we can do some legalized betting. If they get down like 20 points in the second quarter, go ahead and hammer that, you know, Cavs plus whatever, because this team does not fold. And that's one of the reasons I'm excited about January 1st for legalized betting. But
how big do you think that live line got? Cavs plus what? At some point in the third quarter, and then for them to go absolutely down to the wire, it's just unbelievable. It's like, it's my favorite thing. Hypothetically, if betting were legal, when the Buckeyes give up like an early touchdown against like a Big Ten opponent, and they're favored by 47 or 35 or something, and it's like all of a sudden the line drops to Buckeyes minus 21. I'm like, oh yeah, give me that. Give me Buckeyes minus 21 against Maryland.
Yeah, any easy love. You know, if you've watched sports like Craig and I, you've seen it a time or two. You know the comeback is coming. It's a matter of when, not if. And speaking of sports gambling, we at WFNY, we've got a great deal with Underdog Fantasy for first-time depositors. Enter in the code WFNY at checkout, and Underdog will match your deposit up to $100. Underdog is a great platform if you are tired of the DFS salary system. There's tons of great games, drafts every single night. Do not forget, use WFNY at checkout to get your first-time deposit matched up to $100. Little tangent, little gambling tangent here, Craig. Is there a sport that you're most excited about post Jan 1, or are you not really degenerate and you're going to watch us in the Discord just get crazy on the gambling?
Well, first of all, before we leave the Underdog thing, my favorite part of fantasy is the draft, to the point where like I have so much fun with my fantasy football team during the draft, and then I lose interest in making moves during the year. I really do. So the idea that I can just draft over and over and over again throughout the season is awesome to me. But my absolute favorite thing to bet by a long shot is UFC. Because I can sit there and I can buy a whole UFC card and I can know maybe three or four of the fighters that I'm really excited about. But when I'm watching that undercard, I can kind of look at the lines and maybe just pick somebody who I like, throw $5 or $10 on them. And then all of a sudden I've got a rooting interest for that fight, whether it goes 30 seconds or 15 minutes or you know, 9 minutes. It's awesome. So fighting is my favorite because it's so quick. You can place a bet, watch a fight, place a bet, watch a fight, place a bet, watch a fight. It's awesome.
I love how, and I'm not the biggest UFC. I like the sport. I'm not the biggest in terms of knowledge, but the one thing I do like that I noticed was a couple of my friends were texting me about how you can get specific submission types. Like, you know, if it's a knockout versus a tap out. It's just fascinating to me. I love the world. It's fascinating.
Well, no, it's really funny because my wife actually will watch a couple pay-per-views with me. And so we'll just sit there and we'll watch the 3-minute backstory on this guy who's from Wichita and this guy who's from Kenya. And we'll decide, oh yeah, yeah, no, they're in Africa this week, and so the Kenyan has an advantage, and we'll just make up reasons to back a fighter and bet on him, and then we'll be his biggest fan for like, you know, 10 minutes. It's awesome.
Love it, love it. Well, and yeah. back to the Cavaliers. One of the things, Craig, you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this, so I was hoping to get your thoughts on. So one great story, one thing I really like so far this season is the Cavaliers bench. And specifically, I've got to highlight Kevin Love. So the bench is the second in the NBA this season at plus 228. They're absolutely beating up other teams' second unit. Kevin Love is third in plus minus this season in the NBA, only behind Nikola Jokic, two-time MVP, and Devin Booker, who's probably the best shooting guard in the league. Kevin Love this year, 12 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, 40% from three. We've had such a storied timeline with Kevin Love over the last 8 or 9 years, and I'm just so In one way, I'm very impressed with him and his patience with this team and the organization. But two, frankly, I didn't think his body was going to hang on. Just Craig, your thoughts on Kevin Love, the resurgence, and how the heck did we get here with him being? I mean, he's one of the best 3-4 players on the team most nights.
It's really interesting because I think it shows up. Obviously, his shooting's really good, but you're going to have that with Kevin Love. But it seems he's really active on the defensive end and the rebounding. When he's at his best, he is boxing out, he's rebounding, and he's outlet passing. And I think he's really found that groove again. He does look, I don't have any inside information, but he does look healthier than he's been probably in 4 years. And so I feel good for him. You know, I think a lot of people look at the contract that he's got and they're like, well, what he should be producing for that kind of money, as if like the contract that somebody signs 5 years ago is gonna magically make their body work as they get 4 or 5 years older. And so as his body was kind of breaking down and it seemed like he didn't have that gear anymore, and when he was cut from Team USA, not cut, but you know, those stories came out of Team USA, I just feel really good for him that he's playing really well and he looks really good physically. I'm somebody who's had 5 major surgeries in my life. I've had 2 ACLs, 2 discs replaced in my neck, and I had a knee scope this last year. So I know what it means to come back from a surgery, and even for my mediocre jogs around the neighborhood. So like, I just feel good for him that he's like feeling healthy.
Completely. And man, there were some lows there. The Toronto Raptors game a couple years ago where he kind of patted the ball back in bounds once he was ticked off about one of the young Cavalier players doing something they shouldn't have done, leading to more points. And I thought he was as good as gone, making nearly $30 million a year. And at this point, I think he's put the Cavaliers in a position. It's like they want to keep him around. It's just going to be at what cost. This is his last season he's making, I think, 28 or 29.
Let me turn it back around on you for a second. Yeah. So when you listen to NBA podcasts and they talk about him as an expiring deal and this, that, and the other thing, like he's a trade chip, what does that make you think?
Yeah, I think based on what we've seen so far with Kobe Altman and how this front office goes out and does their business, I think they put a really high appreciation what Kevin Love brings, not only as, I mean, frankly, without Lauri Markkanen, he's one of their most important 3-point shooters this season, but he's so loved in that locker room. Guys like Darius have raved about him. I would be pretty stunned if the Cavs looked at him as a trade chip. I'd be much more inclined to think they'd look elsewhere. There's a couple other guys that are in the last year of their deal, one being Caris LeVert, and second, who I think Chetty Osman has the potential to be in the last year of his deal. He may have some kind of like qualifying offer or tag on. But yeah, I frankly think he's not going to be in. I think this might be a little bit of a way for the Cavs to reward him for his patience, but also he loves playing here, man. He looks, like you said, he looks 2-3 years younger being here. These young guys are invigorating him and they're finally playing the right way. And yeah, I would be stunned if the Cavaliers looked at trading him. And I think they're going to come together for some type of deal to keep him here, I would hope, the rest of his career.
All right, I'm going to turn it around on you again, because you mentioned Lauri Markkanen and he's having a phenomenal season so far in Utah. How good do you feel for him, and how much credit do you think the Cavaliers deserve for kind of building a new identity for him as a basketball player in the NBA? I mean, credit to him for doing it, but the Cavaliers too, with their creativity and thinking outside the box.
Yeah, so happy for him and Colin Sexton. It's been awesome to see what the Utah Jazz have done. They were the first NBA team to get to 10 wins this year, and they're stunning one. I think they were, you know, they were the leading vote getter for the number one pick before the season. And I mean, Laurie's the kind of guy who it just never fit in Chicago. You would watch his games and he's this like sculptured 7-foot freak who can shoot the ball. And you're like, every team could use a Lauri Markkanen. He just never, there was some discussion about him and Jim Boylan, not really seeing eye to eye, his coach at the time in Chicago. And by the end of the year last season, it's like he was being talked about as kind of like that fourth core key member, you know, right behind Darius and right behind Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. So happy for him. And it looks like the summer that he went off and played basketball for his country, I mean, he's coming in blazing. This statistic, that he's putting up. So happy for him. And I'm just glad he's in a good situation right now, helping out a Utah Jazz team that, look out, folks. I mean,
let's make no mistake. The Utah Jazz, once they get to the playoffs, they're going to be at a horrible disadvantage, and they're going to exit quickly and exit early. And that's all the more reason why the trade was a win-win the Utah Jazz got some really nice players, but they've got a lot of work to do before they build a legit annual playoff contender. And what the Cavaliers got in getting Donovan Mitchell is the guy who can deliver in game three, game four, game five of a playoff series where that top level talent trumps all.
Don't you know that you're a grown up?
I'm a grown up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days being a grown up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
Right. Yeah. We saw that time and time again at the end of last season with Darius Garland. It was so easy to figure out how to beat the Cavaliers in that Nets game, in the play-in tournament, and then lastly the Atlanta Hawks game. It's blitz Garland, send two guys at him, and make anyone else beat you, Lauri Markkanen included. And you're exactly right. Cavs didn't have an answer. Now, with that type of closer that Donovan Mitchell is, I think you put yourself in a much more dangerous position to defend at the NBA level, exactly to your point of Donovan Mitchell. So you're right. I think at the end of last season, we were, Josh and I were talking a lot about a consolidation trade, almost across sports, you know, a little bit Guardians-esque. They've got a lot of dudes who are average, slightly above average. They needed that next tier up. And man, Donovan Mitchell has been that. He has been a legitimate MVP candidate so far this year.
Well, and to your point, we might be talking a different Guardian story if they do find that consolidation trade. And they had a wonderful season, but you look at some of the people they were bringing off the bench to pinch hit in the playoffs or DH and whatever else, and that consolidation trade, three, four prospects for one legit all-star is exactly what a team like that needs. But we're talking basketball.
That's right. And on the notion of Donovan Mitchell, you know, we would be remiss not to bring up how excellent he's played. So I'm going to rattle off a couple of quick statistics just to show, you know, how good he's played so far this year. Over 31 points per game, 5 rebounds, almost 5 assists, 1.4 steals. He's shooting the heck out of the basketball, 53% from the field, 41% from three, over 90% from the free throw line. Depending on what sports book you look at, he's top 6 or top 8 in MVP odds right now. Craig, what's impressed you the most about him outside of culture stuff? Maybe we'll talk kind of tactically on the court. What have you seen from Donovan so far this year that maybe you didn't get to see, you know, while he played with Utah?
Yeah, I have one thing specifically that just stuck out to me when I got to see him in person, and that's just how thick he is. He is so much better built and stronger. You know, you think of a 6'1" guard or a 6'2" guard, whatever he is, but they're not all 6 foot guards are built equally. And he's got these thick tree trunk legs. He plays much bigger than his size because he can play above the rim. And I didn't notice his strength the way that I didn't know that it existed to the level that it does, because there's some guys who are nimble around the rim, and there's some guys who will jump over you, and some guys who will kind of go through you and make you feel them. And Mitchell is a guy who makes you feel him, and not every NBA player can play that physicality, but he's a small guy who's thicker and can play like that. And so that's probably what I notice most.
Yeah, he has this ability to, I think the NBA did a nice rule change when they at least gave the defender an ability to go up and contest a shot as long as their hands stay straight up. And Mitchell has that unique combination of, to your point, not only the toughness and the strength to take a body shot like that. But then he also has the athleticism to hang in the air long enough where the center is on his way down and Donovan's still hanging in the air for a nice little layup or a kick out. So yeah, you nailed it on the head to me. His decision-making once he gets into the paint, but his ability to just go up against some of these big guys has been really, really astonishing. And I don't think it's egregious to say he's the most physically gifted Cavs player since LeBron. Is that outrageous to say?
No. And my favorite highlight of the entire year, I can't remember how the ball got into Garland's hands, and it wasn't quite a breakaway, but Garland was bringing the ball up on the right-hand side, and Donovan Mitchell kind of like points up at the sky a little bit just before they get over half court. And all of a sudden, 2 seconds later, there's an alley-oop from Garland to Mitchell. And it's like, oh yeah, these 6 foot guards are not all created equally. This guy plays above the rim, and Garland hit him with this beautiful, it looked like one of his shots, the perfect little kind of, perfect arc, perfect spot. And Mitchell slams it home. I don't even remember who they played against. I don't remember what the final score was, but that's the highlight. That was the one. Buddy ball.
Yeah. that was a great comeback. I believe one of the many comebacks they've had already this year. And yeah, he just soaring through the air, and it's still hard to believe that I went to a game last season when the Cavs hosted the Utah Jazz, and Donovan gave the Cavs 41 points and ended up outdoing the Cavaliers in the fourth quarter. And ever since that game, I was poking and prodding of, hey, he's got to be getting unhappy, right? What would a deal look like? And man, it feels surreal at times watching him out there in a Cavs jersey.
Yeah, and he wasn't the first one. Like, maybe this is like the fan in me just apologizing for a guy, but he wasn't the first one out the door. He wasn't the first one to raise his hand and go, get me out of here. So I don't know. It just feels like everybody won that trade, and everybody carried themselves pretty decently in a mediocre situation.
Yeah, I was digging into some of the advanced stats with the Utah Jazz, and there is some funky stuff going on where opposing teams are shooting abnormally poor against them in the paint. The Jazz are making way more threes than they're probably going to. So to your point earlier, Craig, there probably is going to be some regression to the mean here. But until then, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. And
yeah,
they kind of flip the West on their heads. So.
All right. So what else did you have? I keep going back and forth, but I hijacked enough.
No. I have one other quick item, and this is more macro because it happened last year too. And it's just something I'm keeping an eye on, and I like it as a young team, but I do think the Cavaliers are at the point where they're talented enough where I'm going to be keeping a more watchful eye on it is JB's rotation and minutes per game. So it feels like, the core group of three or four guys being Mitchell, Garland, Mobley, and Allen, they're on the court a lot. And we're not getting too far into the rotations at this point. So I went out and looked at minutes per game, and Donovan Mitchell is leading the league in minutes per game. He's at 39.1 minutes per game, which is just,
that's way too many
amount. Yeah, that's an insane amount for a guy who has missed some time early in his career. Darius Garland is at a high amount too, but his is factored down a little bit because he only played a couple minutes in the Raptors. But take that game out, he's right up there with Donovan Mitchell. And JB did this quite a bit last year where I think he wanted to ride the guys, establish a winning culture. But, Craig, I'm looking around and I see guys like Howell Neto and, Robin Lopez for the bigs and some of the other guys on the team. And, I think it's unwise at this point because the Cavs have that talent. I don't think we need to be playing the guys 38, 39 minutes a game. So that's just one thing I'm watching. I'm not hitting the panic button, but I think that we're at the point where the Cavs have enough talent. I'm not worried necessarily about the fourth seed versus the fifth seed. It's get the guys to the finish line, and it's a long season. I say all that easier said than done, because if I'm the coach, I want to go win a game, but it's just something I'm keeping an eye on.
No, I'm with you. And last year, due to injury because of the situation they were in. Part of the reason, and I don't remember how much this got talked about it at the time last year, but part of the reason that Ricky Rubio felt like he got hurt was because he was being overutilized at his age. And I know that the Cavs were up against it and they just didn't have many options. But when I can't pull up the game log right now because I'm on the wrong site. It's not working well. But he was playing so many minutes in those three or four games because the Cavs were up against it on injuries. And then he turns out to get hurt, and he's a guy that they could have absolutely utilized. And this year's Ricky Rubio could be Kevin Love if we're not careful. It could be Caris LeVert. You know, Caris LeVert is another guy who I think has really stepped up from last year. He looks like he feels a lot more comfortable in his role compared to what he did last year. And I was nervous, and I said this a couple of times, probably just in Discord, but LeVert always felt to me like he had some of that ball hog energy, and I couldn't have been more wrong. Like, he really does like to pound the ball, but then he drives, and half the time he's finding teammates who are open. He's not just forcing shots kind of the way who's the guy who is in Utah playing with, who used to play for the Cavaliers?
Clarkson.
Yeah. Clarkson was a little bit more force my shot guy, and LeVert looked to me like, this could be another Clarkson situation, but couldn't be further from the truth. He wants to play that team style. But at the same time, I'm with you. They need to focus on this being a long season. They need to use their bench when Dean Wade's healthy, Lamar Stevens can play, Jetty can play. I don't understand quite what's going on, and maybe you can speak to this, but Okoro seems to be so hot and cold, whether he's playing a little bit or not at all.
Yeah, it's been fascinating. We heard, shame on me for buying into it a little bit, we heard so much good things from the Cavs organization this offseason in terms of the work that Isaac Okoro's put in. And you know, it's tough to watch a third year guy who was the number 5 overall pick. His prototype is exactly what a Cavaliers team that's built like this needs. They need a guy who is a PJ Tucker-like player who's going to guard the best opposing player and shoot corner threes is exactly what they need of him. And it's been tough offensively. I think last night was probably his best game of the season. He had 8 points. He played pretty good defense, and he was part of the crew that JB let ride, you know, really all throughout the fourth quarter to come back. It's been really interesting, and I think JB has been very quick with putting guys in who he thinks is going to win that game. Another example of that is Jetty Osman. He played a ton the first 3-4 games, and he's really been MIA the past couple. So, yeah, I think it's tough right now because your guy, Dean Wade, is really challenging Isaac Okoro for those minutes. And frankly, Dean's just a better player as of, you know, so far this season.
Yeah, he's playing pretty well. But to our point about Okoro, it's like, you know, his minutes are 12, 27, 20, 11, 5, 22, 8, 23, 6, 18, 6, 19. And then the injury game, he played 29. But it's like, how much consistency can a guy get when he's up and down and up and down and in and out? And he might have some DNPs that aren't even listed here. I'm not sure. Has he played in every single game?
I think he's given some minutes in every single game. Okay. Yeah. And another guy who
like you just an mentioned, overtime game against Boston, he gets 5 minutes. Really?
In the type of wing players that Boston have, you'd consider that to be an Isaac Okoro game, at least for some kind of stretch. So, you know,
unless,
another guy,
Dean Wade just gives them more length, I guess, to your point.
Yeah. Another guy who played really well last night was Lamar Stevens. He's absolutely another guy who could compete for some playing time there. So that was one thing that Evan Damrell and I talked about early on was, you know, 4 of the 5 starting roster spots are locked in. The fifth one's interesting, and maybe it's good that way. Maybe the cream is going to rise to the top, or maybe JB is going to go with a hot hand all season, and hopefully that doesn't junk up reps that are needed alongside those other 4. That's one thing that's going to be really intriguing this year is does that fifth guy lock themselves in, or is it just going to be, hey, JB, you're throwing in whoever the hot hand is?
Well, but the thing that people need to realize that we're saying with this conversation is Lamar Stevens is just a guy. Like, if he touches the court in a non-blowout in the playoffs, you're in deep trouble. Like, that's not what you want. That's not what the Cavaliers want. But across 82 games, you need your 10th, 11th, and 12th guys to play minutes, because otherwise you do end up wearing out Donovan Mitchell when it matters least.
Yeah, 100%. In November is not the time to be throwing guys out there 40 minutes a game for that one extra win. So, yeah, it's you know, that's one thing that's going to be intriguing to watch. If I look at what's coming up next for the Cavaliers, so daunting West Coast road trip, right, where they lost four games in a row. They lost three games on the back end of it, lost at home last night to the Timberwolves. Coming up on the schedule, Craig, they host the Milwaukee Bucks on Wednesday. It looks like Giannis is going to be for that game. And then they have a homestand. They play Charlotte on Friday and Miami on Sunday. What are your thoughts on that Wednesday Milwaukee game with a healthy Giannis? Chris Middleton will likely still be out. Just like those two Boston Celtics games, you think that's another good measuring stick for this team? Are you going to be glued in, locked in on Wednesday?
It's the ultimate cop-out. If they win, it's a measuring stick. If they lose, it's no big deal. It's just a regular season game. I'm such a fan when it comes to this stuff that I pick and choose. And the narrative just depends on how it works out best for the Cavaliers. I'm so in on this team. I'm so in love with it. As a fan, it's as much fun as I've had with the Cavaliers team maybe in my life so far. So I'm just totally in the tank.
I love it. It's so homegrown. It just feels so natural watching the young kids play. It's been a heck of a time. And yeah, Craig, thank you for jumping on it. Before we wrap, did you have any other thoughts, nuggets you wanted to hit on?
Yeah. For any of the people who are here for the basketball talk, you can kind of tune out now. I have a couple questions for you, Seth. So this is the first time we've been on a podcast together. I've been talking to you in the Discord, and we've gotten to know each other a little bit there. But like, what's the sports resume? Where'd you come up? How'd you become a Cavs fan? How'd you want to talk about the Cavs? Are they your first and only Cleveland team? Are you as passionate about the rest? Give me the fan resume.
Yeah, absolutely. Grew up pretty typical baseball, basketball, football player. Unfortunately, like, you know, physically, body wise, I was definitely more in the football elk, but the love was always basketball. So I was like that dumb, like 5'11 kid on the basketball court who played like way too aggressively and just bowled into people. And that's
hard.
Always been, yeah, that's right. Can't shoot. We'll set hella screens, gonna rebound the basketball. Yeah, just the guy you don't want to play.
I was the king of the box out running. I always had a spot in like seventh and eighth grade because I knew how to run the motion offense. I was always in the right spot. But when it came to who was the most talented player later on, that's when I fell out of the rotation.
I love it. What position do you play, Craig? Were you a guard?
So I was tall at first, so I learned the four. I played power forward, and then I stopped growing at 5'10". And so by the time I hit ninth grade, I was all of a sudden guard, and I didn't have any of the ball handling skills. How about you?
Yep, exact same. I was an early grower, so yeah, I was playing in the paint, and then had to shift over to like a clunky kind of chubby shooting guard. So that was problematic. But yeah, it's always been the Cavs. I'm a Browns ticket holder. They're who they give me the most volatility. They give me the most highs and lows. But in terms of watching, basketball, NBA form specifically, it's just beautiful poetry. And I've been a Cavs fan for really, you know, you said Sasha Parker. I was thinking of guys like Jamario Moon and even like the crew before that, even the Bob Sura days. And man, I've been a Cavs fan for a long time. And
so what are your formative Browns years?
Great question. Unfortunately, the team that I was most connected to, I would say, was probably that 2007 team with Derek Anderson, Braylon Edwards, Kellen Winslow.
That was a fun season, though. You got to admit.
It's truly awesome. I mean, high-powered offense, dynamic. And I think one of the rare times 10-6 didn't make the playoffs, which was really disappointing. But it was tough, honestly. My dad was a football coach, so he definitely kind of got me into it. But as I was a young teenager, it was hard to cling on to just crap. And I didn't develop really the hardcore kind of Browns fandom until my mid to late 20s, and have been a ticket holder for a while. But it was hard to get connected to the team. And then over the other shoulder, you've got, LeBron James and one of the most exciting teams in the NBA to latch onto. And I was hooked.
So which part of the city do you grow up in? Do you grow up in Northeast Ohio?
I did, Canton, just an hour south. And now my wife and I are over in Fair Park. So we're about 15 minutes right from downtown. So.
Nice. Did you go away for school?
I did, Kent State. So I've always kind of been in that Northeast Ohio area.
Yeah. So it was real.
Were you Ohio State, Craig? Sorry.
No, I was Boston University. And so it was really hard. And honestly, it was really hard to be out of the TV market for the Browns and the Cavs, especially the Cavs. Like, you just, unless they were playing the Celtics, I just never got to watch them. And so I fell in love again in my 18 and 19 year old years with Joe Tate and the radio broadcast. I had kind of stopped listening to basketball on the radio when I lived in Cleveland. And then I moved out of market, and honestly, I'm old enough that audio streaming on the internet was kind of a new thing. And so I was able to listen to the Cavaliers on audio over the internet. And I became a basketball fan. Those were some awful teams to even listen to, though, hoping for Ilgauskas every year. And this is the year that his foot is going to be healthy and he's going to play a full season. And those were some rough times, but those are what kind of cement us as fans, those rough years.
Yeah. And for those just listening, I'm holding up a Joe Tate, Terry Pluto, Joe Tate book. I had a chance to meet Joe Tate, and he was like, all everyone says, he's just the nicest guy. He was unbelievable.
And Terry Pluto too.
That's right. Talked to us for 10 minutes while we got his autograph. And he's such an interesting guy. I've read, it's a little bit of a zoom into his life, calling the Mount Union football games. And he's just an all-time guy. But yeah, the one thing that I have a bit of a connection with the Cavs is my mom. For whatever reason, she was never like a basketball fan growing up. I think when maybe she was front running a little bit, but when LeBron was drafted in like 2003, she was like, oh, I'm going to start getting into the Cavs. And so her and I would, if I'd come down from college or whatever on the weekend, her and I would like zone in and watch some Cavalier basketball. So anytime there, I love taking her to games, and it was kind of a cool thing to share with Andre.
Well, yeah. And the last thing is that, I know you're a Browns ticket holder, and I'm sure you've been to Indians/Guardians games over the years, but there's just something about the atmosphere and the way that they've built up the basketball experience here in Cleveland. It's got a lot of character, a lot of personality, and for what, it still feels like Dan Gilbert hasn't been around that long, but he's been around a long time. Now that you turn around, all of a sudden it's been a long time. It feels like there's a lot of tradition, and it's hard for old guys like me to maybe recognize the tradition, but for guys your age, to guys who really came up the first time, who don't really remember Richfield, it's got to feel like a lot of rich tradition in Cleveland, even if they keep changing the name of the field house.
Absolutely. I ended up taking my nephew to his first game, I'd say 4 or 5 years ago. And ever since, it's an annual Christmas gift from me to him. He's obsessed with it. Everything from, Ahmad's voice to the fire coming out in the introduction. It's just such a special event that they put on 41 times a year.
It's amazing they've been able to keep Ahmad around and keep, all that stuff. I don't know if it's the same Moondog. Maybe there's another Moondog in there, but like all that, just keeping Ahmad there, having him be the consistent voice for I don't even know how long it's been, but it feels like forever.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. There's no need to like pair the other teams, but if you think about your thoughts and memories of going to a Cavs game versus a Guardian or Indians versus a Browns, it's just, I'd have a hard time, not putting the Cavs way above in tier one above those other two. It's just, it's unique. It's special. It's so much fun.
All right, last thing. Where are your Brown seats? Which part of the stadium do you sit in?
Opposite dog pound, unfortunately, lower bowl. The good thing is we're under an overhang. So rain, snow, November to games, we're locked in. But I don't know, Craig. I might be looking at Ticketmaster for the last few weeks of the season, man. I don't know if I can do it.
Yeah? You're going to sell them off? I wouldn't waste the amount of – well, I mean, I've got kids too, so I've got other things to keep in mind. But I wouldn't spend the number of hours it takes to go to a live football game the rest of the season. No way.
No. Indoor, you know, cut it clean 3-4 hours, and that's about it. I think, you know, next year is a big year for me personally as a season ticket holder. I'm going to see how things go. But, you know, I do something where I'll kind of lay out the schedule, and then I have a lot of friends who have since moved on to California, New York, Texas, whatever. And they'll actually, I'll ask them, hey, do you want to come in for a game? Is there something else going on? So I have nice tight calendar of old buddies coming in, and it's a commitment, you know, not just financially, time wise. And you're exactly right. It's trying when they're struggling.
Well, and honestly, I spent the first half of this Brown season coaching travel soccer and missing the majority of the games. And if the game was good, I'm not one of those guys who goes dark mode, and I know what's happening. And so if the game's a disaster, I don't even go back and watch all the time. So it's the most Browns football I've missed in 20 years.
It's a hell of a year for it. I don't think you're regretting that one bit, you know?
No. All right. Well, that's enough out of me. I'll let you close up shop.
Yeah. Yeah. Craig, thank you for joining me. It was a pleasure to get to chat with you live here. We're going to be having another edition come out on Thursday. I'm not going to announce the guest. I think folks will be pretty pumped up with who we have for Thursday. So more to come there. Thank you.
It could be Terry Pluto. You should tune in. You never know.
Could be Mr. Pluto. We'll see what happens. Thank you all for tuning in. Like I said, we're going to come back Thursday or keep doing this weekly. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of the night.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on!